शैवनरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीराय वीरिरमायणे शैव पुराणे भरते तथा अधवन्दे च मध्ये च हरिः सर्वत्र गीयते मुखं करोति वात्सल्यं भङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपतमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनधारणं परमानन्दमाधवम् Paramananda he madhava madunga lukshi makaranda se makaranda parakori anande bolo hari hari harinka name vando vela parikori vechaka dola Sechaka dolanka paraye Manamo rahu nirandare Manamo nirandare rahu Ha Krishna boli jiva jao Ha Krishna boli jao jiva Mote udhar rara java Mote udhar rara java Mote udhar rara java Dharma projita kaita vota padamo nirvachanam sutam Devyam vastava matra vastu shivadam dapa trao mudanam Srimad bhagavate mahamune kate kimba parayishvara Sadyo vidyavarudyate tukativishu shushu distakshana Nivamakopataro galitam palam Sukamukharam itragrava samyutam Pivata bhagavatam rasamavayam Mohuraho rasikavu vibhavuka Anaito pasamam sakshad Bhakti yogam arhoksaje Lokashyajanato vidvam Shakri sadvata samhitam Yashyam vaishivamanayam Krishne paramapurushe Bhaktir utpadyate pumsa shoka moha vayapaha Srimad bhagavatam paranamamalam yad vaishnavanam priyam Yasmin paramahamsam ekamamalam jnanam param giyate Tatra jnana vairabhya bhakti saitam naiskaranyam avishvitam Tatshrimbam sipatem vicharna paro bhaktyavamuchen naraha Artoyam Brahma Sutranam Bharatartha Vinirnayah Gayatri Bhasharupo So Vedartha Paribhrimitah Sarva Vedeti Hasanam Saram Saram Samudviram Sarva Vedanta Saram He Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyade Sadrasam Rita Triptasya Nanyatra Sadvuchi Kuchi Krishna Bhakti Rasa Swarup Sri Bhagavata Bhakti Veda Shastra Hoite Parama Mahatma Chari Veda Upanishade Jata Kichu Hoya Tara Arta Lena Vyasa Korila Sanchaya Sutre Jehu Vishaya Vachana Bhagavate Sehru Shoka Nivandana Jivera Nisara Lagi Sutra Koilo Vyasa Mayavari Vashishunle Hoya Sarvanasha Jaha Bhagavata Pada Vaishnavira Stane Ekanda Shayakara Chaitanya Charane Bhagavata Jinamane Seja ravan shama tarasasta achi janme janme prabhu jana hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
I want to thank all of you for coming here. We should understand something about the nature of bhakti. Bhakti is not something you can package and sell. It's not something which can be distributed by an institution. The closest thing we can find to bhakti, in my humble opinion, in this material world, is art. For art to be appreciated, it has to be original. If someone does some mechanical thing, we call that craft. And that's nice. It's a nice craft. We appreciate that. But art is something which comes from the heart. Art is something, real art, when you see that thing, you feel inspired by that. It wakes you up. It shocks you. It startles you. It's something original. It's from that particular person. We don't appreciate an artist who copies from someone else, who is like someone else, is a clone of someone else. So bhakti has all these same qualities. Bhakti also has to be individual. It's from the individual person. And it should be done in an artistic way. If we read in Bhakti Ratnakar, we were mentioning this morning, in the fifth wave, which comprises, I think, maybe 5,000 verses, that's one of the greatest collections of teaching in Gaudiya Vaishnavism about music. In fact, the entire chapter speaks about the Rasa Lila and the different instruments that are used, the different tals, the different ragas, the different emotions that are evoked, the different types of dances which go on, because that's art, and that's what pleases Krishna and pleases Radharani so much. And therefore Radharani, one of her names, is Kalavati. She's the greatest artist. So it's nice when we do something like this, and it's a little more personal. It's more of an artistic kind of thing. It's more from the heart. And we should encourage artists, since difficult institutions historically don't encourage artists very well. And that doesn't just mean ISKCON. ISKCON, Prabhupada started our art department, and so many devotees, if you go to Lithuania, we were there last year, the management there, they have a very difficult time because all the older devotees are all artists. They joined, most of the older devotees during the Soviet regime, and they weren't good managers. So they have a very difficult time taking care of things like that. So we like that. We want to encourage artists, but we also need some managers because artists are notoriously terrible at managing anything. So we're trying to speak something about an unlimited subject matter, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is a book which is all about art. It discusses about music, it discusses about dance, it discusses about feelings. As we were saying this morning, this music is a thing which makes this whole world go round. The very word Bharat, which is a word for this planet, is connected with music. The sages say that the word Bharat is composed of three separate words, ba, ra, and pa. Ba indicates bhav. And ra indicates rag. Mm-hmm. And ta indicates tal. So these three things comprise music. Bhav, emotions, some feelings. Mm-hmm. And raga. Raga means also attraction. And we can play some different ragas, like this Kalavati raga, and it attracts the mind, it attracts the heart. There's different ragas, this Tansen, you may know of Tansen. Mataji must know of Tansen. Mm-hmm. One famous Indian musician. And there are many, many stories about Tansen. Sometimes he would go to the Akbar, would call into his court, and on one occasion, Tansen, inside the palace, he played he sang a mega rag, which is a raga cloud. And inside the palace, a cloud appeared, and he made it rain inside of a golden cup, just one place. And so there's ragas which will enchant animals, there's ragas which can make fire, there's ragas which can make things cool. But those ragas, that's not the purpose of Vedic culture. The purpose is bhakti. But Krishna likes these kind of ragas. But they should be preceded with bhav. So bhav, rag, and then tal. Tal comes there. Tal is also very important. Tal means the beats. If you go to Jagannath Puri, and you're there for the Pahandi Vijay, when Jagannath comes out, they call him Kaliya, the black one. Mm-hmm. Or Chakadola, round-eyed lord. When he comes out at the Rath Yatra time, the pandas, there's maybe 100 or more pandas playing gongs. And they're all beating the same tal. And you hear this boom, 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 boom. And just listening, you can feel it. Your tears come to your eyes, your hairs are standing, you can feel, my God, Krishna wants to go to Vrindavan. It's time to go. And when they take him on the chariot, they're all in unison, beating this kind of tal. So those beats, those things evoke some emotion. Because Krishna wants that. The word music, they say, it comes from the Christian tradition. When Moses met God on Mount Sinai, the very first thing that he heard, God spoke to him. And the first word that God spoke was muzak. And it was so beautiful, and the sound of his voice, that became music. And as you may know, all traditional music, whether it's with Navajo Indians in North America, or in South America, or the Indian people in the subcontinent of Bharatvarsh, or here in Europe, all music originally was meant for the pleasure of God. Mm-hmm. But today things are a little bit bewildered. Mm-hmm. So we should approach the Srimad Bhagavatam, understanding these things, that Srimad Bhagavatam is a book which is, it's a person. We cited the statement of Supramana Goswami, Krishna Tulya Bhagavat. Vibhu Sarvashrai, Pratishloki Pratyakshananta Koi, that the Bhagavatam, just as Krishna's Vibhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so also the Bhagavatam is a person and is God, is the incarnation of the Lord. Mm-hmm. It's described in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna Swadhamapadate, Dharma Gyanari Bhisaha, Kalo Nashtarisamesha Pranarkudunolitaha, that after Krishna left this world, he took with him Dharma. Everything became very dark. But Srimad Bhagavatam appeared. And that Srimad Bhagavatam gives light to this dark world because it's an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Vrindavan Das Thakur glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam. Premamoya Bhagavata Krishna Sri Anga Tahate Kahina Jata Gopya Krishna Ranga. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Hare. Srimad Bhagavatam is simply full of Krishna Prem, Krishna Sriyanga. It's part of Krishna's body. How do you understand Srimad Bhagavatam? Vrindavan Das Thakur says, Isharera Tattva Jena Bhujarena Jai. Ehi Mata Bhagavata Sare Shastra Gai. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram, Hare Hare. In the same way that Krishna is inconceivable, so also Srimad Bhagavatam is inconceivable. Mm-hmm. Who can understand Srimad Bhagavatam? There's one statement which appears in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Mahaprabhu says the same exact verse twice. And he says it to the same person, to Devananda Pandit. Mm-hmm. And it's very significant in our discussion about Srimad Bhagavatam, because Mahaprabhu, he picked on Devananda Pandit. Devananda Pandit, in one place, Mahaprabhu said, he's been studying the Bhagavatam for many lifetimes, but he doesn't understand a single word. But he's a great Sanskrit scholar. But he couldn't understand a single word of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Because the Bhagavatam is not just a book to be mastered. When you go to the university, mm-hmm, you study George Orwell and you master 1984, the book. Mm-hmm. But you don't master Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to understand how to approach Srimad Bhagavatam. This is something we'd like to speak about tonight. So Mahaprabhu, he tells Devananda Pandit, Bhagavata Bhuji Hina Jada Achigyan Sehi Najanai Bhagavati Rakamah.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
He says, the one who says, I understand Srimad Bhagavatam, one who thinks I understand Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahaprabhu says, he doesn't understand Srimad Bhagavatam at all. How do we understand Srimad Bhagavatam? This is a very, very important subject matter. And for all of us, we're new to this culture, most of us, there are a few exceptions. We don't know very much about it. Srila Prabhupada came and gave us something. He gave us the Srimad Bhagavatam in the form of this book. So a very relevant question arises. How do we approach Srimad Bhagavatam? How do we understand it? The Bhagavatam itself speaks about this. It says that Parashvara Anukatanam Pavanam Bhagavadyasaha, that we should learn to associate with devotees. I'm like, I don't have a problem associating with devotees. We ask Mataji to make a cake. And we all come together and we associate with devotees. No. That's not how we associate with devotees. We have to learn to associate with devotees by hearing Krishna Katha. That's sadhu sangha. Satam prasangam mama viryasam vido bhavanti hutkarna rasayana katha. We want that rasayana katha, that thing which will give us life. But for that, that's satam prasangam. Mm-hmm. This is a very, very important verse, third canto of the Bhagavatam. We want to hear from the Satmukh, from the lotus mouth of a realized person. In our next session, we'll speak something about the speakers of Bhagavatam and who is a proper speaker. It's a very big subject, a very fascinating, very deep topic. This verse speaks something about that. We want to hear from someone who is a Niragbhakta, who has no material desires, who's a Premi Bhakta, Satam Prasangam. But another meaning of Satam Prasangam is that we want to hear Sat Katha. We may not have such association, but if we simply repeat what we've heard in the Bhagavatam, in Orissa, in all the villages, they have Bhagavat Tungis. To this day, I visited many of the villages there, and the Bhagavat Tungi is a separate little building, oftentimes just a little mud hut, and they'll have their different deities and things in there. And every night, traditionally, instead of television and whatever, the people would come together and they would hear from some Brahman, some sadhu, from the Bhagavatam, or sometimes Garuda Purana, Nishinga Purana, whatever. They would come together every night and they would hear. And this is how we have to associate with devotees. If we don't have such a pure person, then we can also associate with pure katha by coming together and just reading something. So we want that satam prasangam. Vishwanath, in his Sartha Darshani Tika, on this verse, he raises an interesting point. What is the necessity, what is the importance of the prefix pra before the word sangha? Why not just satam sangam? Right? We know the word sangha. We all come together and do something. What is the difference between sangha and prasangha? Prasangha means very special. And Vishwanath says that sangha means topics that are about religion and dharmic things. You should be a vegetarian. Prabhuji, you're a vegetarian? Very good. Mm-hmm. You should be honest. Don't tell lies. Don't cheat on your wife. Mm-hmm. You should chant the holy names. You should come to the temple. You should give money to Krishna. You should lead a good life like that. Those are important things. Varnashram dharma. Those kind of things. Satam sangam. But what is satam prasangam? Satam prasangam, Vishwanath says, this is Rasayana Katha. This is the Katha which gives us life. And Shraddha Bhaktir, Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. There's an anukrama, a sequence of events which begins with faith, which goes, or Vaidhi Bhakti, which then goes to Ruchi or Bhav Bhakti, and then culminates in Krishna Prema. And that comes from Prasanga. Prasanga means topics directly about Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada wanted that. He wanted this to be the Krishna consciousness movement, not a movement for God consciousness, a movement for religiousness, but a movement where people come together and they speak and think about Krishna. So this is a very important thing, and we need to learn how to come together with devotees to do this. So this is a very important thing. And then in this regard, there's a science about speakers, about listeners. We may raise a question. Who is more important in a Bhagavat Saptaha, in a gathering of Vaishnavas, and they're hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam? Three elements are there. There's a speaker, there are listeners, and there's the Bhagavat Katha. Some people say four elements, the fourth element being someone who inquires. So, keeping it at three, between the speakers and the listeners, who is more important? Who is more prominent? What would you say? The speaker. Mm-hmm. That's usually what people say, but it's not true. More important is the listener. And we can give different evidences for this, some practical evidences from Srila Prabhupada's life. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to France, they had a program and invited all the hippies, and they were chanting and dancing, and everything was very nice. And then they brought out a big Vyasasan for Srila Prabhupada to sit on the stage. Prabhupada came out, sat down, and started to play cartels. And those French hippies, you know French people, they're a little strong in France, they started shouting. And Prabhupada couldn't understand what they were saying. He asked one of his disciples, what are they saying? He said, well, Prabhupada, they're calling you bad words. They're saying you should get off the chair. Who are you? What are you doing? So then Prabhupada said, anyway, then let's just do kirtan. No katha. They had a very qualified speaker, but the listeners weren't eager. And so nothing came out. There was no Bhagavat katha. On the other hand, we've all had the experience that we may not feel ourselves qualified, may not be qualified. But I think we've all had the experience sometimes we meet someone who's very inquisitive, very, very eager. And they want to know something, and you start speaking, and all of a sudden you're very surprised what comes out of your mouth. Very nice things. So if you have a qualified speaker, but if there's no qualified listeners, nothing happens. This is a Vaishnav Sangha. When we have a Bhagavat Katha, it's worshipping a deity. And so many Vaishnav Sanghas I've seen in India, and in some places, in some ISKCON temples and other temples, they worship the Bhagavatam. They keep it on the altar. They offer puja to it. And when it comes time for some katha, they take it off the altar with great reverence, they put it down, and they offer artik to it, they offer prayers to it, and then they begin to speak. And in that sangha, the speaker is like a pujari. You may be a pujari in the temple, and everyone comes for mangal artik. And if you think, oh, look, so many people came today to see me, very good. You're an illusion. They didn't come to see you. They came to see Thakurji. They came to see the deity. You're just a humble servant. So the speaker is something like that. If the speaker thinks that, oh yes, so many people came to hear me, or if the listeners are coming thinking, I want to hear this person, and it's like a personality kind of cult, that's not good. We should like to hear from a particular person because that person speaks about Krishna. If he doesn't speak about Krishna, what's the value? Sometimes Srila Prabhupada, once in South Africa, there was one, the devotees had a small center. they rented it from a lady who lived right next to the house. And when they rented the house, they put on hats and Western clothes, and they didn't tell her they were Hare Krishnas. And she didn't know until 4:30 the next morning. And she found out. And she wasn't very happy about it. They'd already signed a lease. There's nothing she could do. So she was very, very angry. And whenever the devotees would come out, she would shout at them and call them names and whatever. So when Srila Prabhupada came, the devotees were all very nervous. Well, what's going to happen when Prabhupada sees her? So the next morning, Prabhupada said, I want to go for a walk. Well, Prabhupada, you should know this lady next door, she's outside now, and she's not a very nice person. We'll go. So they came out, and Prabhupada walked right over to her and started talking to her about her garden. And she became very charmed and thought, well, I'm growing this kind of flower and this and this. And then every day, Prabhupada would talk to her. He talked about the weather. One day he talked to her about her teeth and his teeth. And I still have all my teeth. And, you know, her digestion or this. He never talked to her about Krishna. And she liked Prabhupada. Ashradhadane vimukhi prashambhati ishtopadesha shivanamaparada. Padma Purana says, don't speak to people about Krishna who don't have faith in you. Don't preach to them. That's a namaparada. You can say something else. Just let them love you as a saintly person. Let them get to know you're a real person. You're not just a robot or a fanatic. Try to cram something down their throat. So we may have a sadhu. It may be a very nice sadhu. But if he doesn't speak about Krishna, what's the value? And he won't speak about Krishna unless there's a person who's there who's interested to hear. So we want to come together with devotees and hear the Bhagavatam. And in such a Vaishnav Sangha, it's not that the speaker is better than the listeners. Will a Vaishnav, or an inspiring Vaishnav, think, yes, I'm very important. You see, they all came here for me. That's not a Vaishnav. He's not a pujari. He's not doing proper worship of the Bhagavatam. If the pujari closes the curtains and just stands there and says, oh, here I am, guys. You can start the kirtan now, huh? It's not right. There's something wrong. If the speaker in the Bhagavatam starts telling stories about his own life or some mundane thing, he's not speaking about Krishna, there's something wrong. And if the listeners come just to hear some personality cult or to become charmed or entertained, there's something wrong. We should come together to hear about Krishna. And that's very, very wonderful. It's very inspiring for the heart. Why is it so inspiring? Many different people come at that time. In London, when Srila Prabhupada came there one time, he called for one devotee. This devotee had made a Vyasasan. And Prabhupada came in and he sat down, Padmalochan Prabhu. He made this Vyasasan with some other devotees. Prabhupada came and sat down and gave his talk. And after he said, nice Vyasasan, very good. He called for Padmalochan. He said, I want you to make two more Vyasasans, small ones. He said, you don't know, Lord Brahma and Narad Muni, they're coming regularly to hear the Bhagavatam. So they did. He made two small Vyasasans, one for Lord Brahma and one for Narad Muni. When we hear the Bhagavatam, if we're doing it in the right mood, so many personalities will come. And there's blessings there. That's why sadhus, they do bhajan in a holy dham. Because there's so many great personalities there that we don't see. And they'll give some blessing if they see even rotten yavana malechas that we are. If we're coming together to hear the Bhagavatam, they're very happy and they'll give some blessing. The Skanda Purana describes it's not just great devotees who come. Srimad Bhagavatam Shastram Yatra Bhagavatar Yada Kirtyate, Shruyate, Chapi, Shri Krishna's Tatra Nishchitam. Wherever and whenever devotees come together to hear and speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, you should know for sure, Kirtyate, Shruyate, Chapi, Shri Krishna's Tatra Nishchitam. Krishna personally comes. Because Krishna is enchanted by the Bhagavatam. The next verse describes that Krishna doesn't come alone. He's never alone. Srimad Bhagavatam Yatra Shlokam Shlokardamevacha Patrapi Bhagavan Krishna Balava Bhivirajate. Wherever a single verse is spoken, shloka or shlokardam, even half a verse is spoken, Krishna personally comes with the gopis. to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. This is such a wonderful, wonderful, special function for devotees to come together and hear and recite Srimad Bhagavatam. But we have to do it in the right mood. A question arises in this regard. I've not seen this question arise in India. I've not seen this question arise amongst any sadhus and any sangha that I've seen in India. But it has arisen a lot in the West. Mm-hmm. Perhaps because of some different cultural background. The question is, what is the difference between reading and hearing? Mm-hmm. In India, it's a non-issue, as far as I've seen. Everybody understands we should read, but hearing is another thing. Mm-hmm. There's some difference between reading and hearing. And it's very, very important in to approach the Bhagavatam that we should understand this point. There's a story we can give in this regard. There was once one married couple, and they got in an argument that often happens in married life. Mm-hmm. And the husband and wife wouldn't speak to each other. And for 1 week, they didn't say a word to each other. They were just doing their things in the house. Then one day, the husband, he had to go for some business trip. So he took some paper and a pen, and he wrote a note. "My dear wife, tomorrow morning my train leaves at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you please cook me some breakfast and wake me up by 5 o'clock in the morning so that I can eat and then I can leave in time to catch my train." And he gave the note to his wife. She was very happy because she felt he gave in first. I won the argument like this. So she's a good lady. And the next morning she rose early and she started cooking at 4 o'clock and she made a nice breakfast for her husband. And then when it came 5 o'clock and it was time to wake him up, she went over by his bed. And she took a big piece of paper and a magic marker and she wrote, "Wake up." Mm-hmm. And she put it there beside his bed. And somehow he didn't wake up. And 5 o'clock went by and 5:30. About 6:30 in the morning, half an hour after his train had already left, the sun's coming through the window and he wakes up, looks at the clock and becomes very upset, starts shouting, "What did you do? I told you to wake me up at 5 o'clock. And his wife, she says, "Victor, good boy, you wrote me a note. I also wrote you a note. Wake up." There's a difference between hearing and reading. We should understand how to approach the Bhagavatam. Therefore, we cited the other day, yesterday, that Lord Shiva, he says, "Aham Vedmi, I understand the Bhagavatam. Shukavedi, Shukadeva Goswami, he understands because he heard from me. Aham Vedmi, Shukavedi, Vyasa Vedi na Vediva." Whether Vyasa understands or not, I can't really say, because Vyasa didn't hear from Lord Shiva. He heard from Narad Muni. That's a separate thing. And then he says, "Bhaktya Bhagavatam Grayam Nabudaya Nachatikaya." How do you understand the Bhagavatam? How do we understand Krishna? "Bhaktya Mama Bhajanati Yavanyas Chashmi Tattvataha." Krishna's only understood by bhakti. These three come together: bhakti, bhakta, and Bhagavan. You can't understand Bhagavan without the bhakta. And therefore, Duistani Bhagavati. There are two Bhagavats. The Grantha Bhagavat and Krishna Kripa Patra, the Bhakta Bhagavat, the devotee. The book Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat. Bhakti Stu Bhagavat Bhakta Sangena Parijayate. Brihannaradiya Purana says that bhakti comes from the bhakta. If you want to get bhakti, if you want to approach the Lord, you have to have bhakti, and to get that bhakti, you have to approach a devotee. Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya sadhu sangha. Kaviraj Goswami states that the birthplace of Krishna bhakti is sadhu sangha. It comes from devotees. And Lord Shiva states about the Bhagavatam, "Bhaktya Bhagavatam grayam, na buddhaya, na chatika." You can't understand with your intelligence. It's a simple, common sense thing. Do an experiment. Go someplace downtown. You have some drunkard people sometimes in Stockholm. Find some drunkard laying on the street and go to him and say, "Hey, man, check this out. Look at this book, huh? Maybe he can read." "Srimad before he vomits all over you or something and falls back unconscious or whatever. He can read something. And then take the same book, go to the university, and find some young man who's sitting next to a couple of very beautiful young girls. Mm-hmm. And give him the book. Hey, check this out, man. Really good book. Read this. What will he understand? Understand something more. But then you go to a professor of Sanskrit in the university who studied many different commentaries in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He'll know something more. But that professor may be very fond of smoking cigarettes and eating meat and different things. He doesn't really understand the Bhagavatam. There's no buddhiga. It's not possible by intelligence. Then go to a new bhakta in some ISKCON temple and speak to him about Srimad Bhagavatam. See what he understands. Okay. And then go to speak to Radha Govinda Maharaj, or some sadhu who's been studying the Bhagavatam for their whole life and practicing what the Bhagavatam says, and hear their realizations. There's a difference. It's a common, simple point. There's a difference in understanding. So we should approach the Bhagavatam in the right mood. And sometimes devotees, we have this idea that all we have to do is we just read Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada, he said in one place that some people say, what is the use of accepting a guru? I'll just read the book. And Prabhupada said, of course, they have a very bad experience. And Prabhupada said then, they may read Bhagavad Gita 100 times, they may read it 1,000 times, but they won't understand a single word. Because the Bhagavatam is Krishna. And Krishna is a person. Krishna, he reserves the right to be approached according to his terms. And what are his terms? Ye me bhakta janaparta. Na me bhakta sate janaha. Mad bhaktanam cha ye bhaktaste me bhaktatamo mataha. A very famous verse Krishna tells to Arjuna in the Adi Purana. He says, those people say they're my devotees, they're not my devotees. You see all those people with the t-shirts, I love Vrindavan, I love Krishna. Krishna says, no, they're not my devotee. No. Those people who are devotees of my devotee, they're my real devotees. We have to approach Krishna through a person. Acharyavan Purushoveda. The Upanishads state that if someone wants to understand Veda, they have to approach a guru. Otherwise they can't understand. And Prabhupada describes this in many different places in his purport in Antalila, chapter 7, text 53. If one wants to learn the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam, one must take lessons from a realized soul. One should not proudly think that one can understand the transcendental loving service of the Lord simply by reading books. One must become a servant of a Vaishnava. We have to do that. Of course, it's very convenient, and we may have had a bad experience, so we're a little shy. So we're afraid to approach a person. And it's convenient just to approach a book. The book doesn't give me any instructions. It's very easy. It's not going to tell me anything bad. I can just keep the book on the shelf, look at the book when I want to, get some inspiration from it. It's a passive kind of relationship. But bhakti is a science of relationships. We're not satisfied with shantaras. We're not satisfied with passive relationships. We want something deeper. We want something rasik. But to get that, mahuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuka. We have to approach those persons who are rasik and bhavuk. We have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from them. And Srila Prabhupada described this on a number of different occasions. Madhudwisa Prabhu in 1975 in Melbourne, he asked Srila Prabhupada he said, can someone become a devotee just by reading your books? And Prabhupada said, no. It's not that you have to associate with the author. You should have to associate with one who knows. And the devotees were a little confused. They said, but what about your purports? Would those serve as an explanation? And Prabhupada said twice, no, no. He has to approach someone who knows the subject matter. He said that to you have to, if you want to be recognized by the state as a doctor, you have to go to the university. You have to learn from someone. I can tell you, you have a headache. Mataji has a headache. No problem. I read a book a couple of days ago about brain surgery. And I have a pocket knife here. So we'll just go in the other room. Will you accept that? No. Good for you. You have to hear from a person, even to understand medical science, and what to speak to understand bhakti. But we have some impersonalism in us. We have some doubts in us. We don't have faith in sadhu. We don't have faith in Krishna. But Krishna's there, and he's very nice, but after Srila Prabhupada, Krishna, there's no more sadhus. He was broke after that. That was it. This is the philosophy we were saying the other day of Hiranyakashipu. He thinks that Krishna, God, doesn't exist. Prahlad tells him, Father, you should worship Krishna. Who is your Krishna? He's God. Where is he? Father, he's everywhere. Is he in this pillar? Yes, Father. Then I'll kill him. And he took his sword and he got a big surprise. So Krishna's everywhere, but Krishna's not alone. Samsaro Vaishnavadino. Deva Vaishnava Palitaha. Aham cha Vaishnavadina. Tasmat Shrestha cha Vaishnavaha. Krishna states to Arjun in the Padma Purana that Samsara Vaishnavadino, this whole samsara is dependent on the presence of Vaishnavas. And Vaishnava there means pure Vaishnava, means pure devotee. The proof that pure devotees are present is the sun is shining. There's air. Because this samsara, this whole universal universe, is dependent on the presence of the Vaishnavas. Deva Vaishnava Palitaha. The devatas, they require the presence of Vaishnavas, pure Vaishnavas. Otherwise, they have strength to go on. Krishna says, what to speak of them? Aham cha Vaishnavadinas. I can't exist. There's no Krishna if there's no Vaishnav. I heard one person was writing an article, no sadhus in ISKCON. What a very childish, foolish, atheistic thing to say. No sadhus, no sadhus at Radhakund. Or no sadhus in the Gaudiya Math, no sadhus with the Babaji's. What is that? How can say that? There's sadhus everywhere, because Krishna is everywhere. We simply have to qualify ourselves and cry, and then Krishna will appear before us. He'll send us sadhu. But we don't want to do that. We just want to go, and I'll ask Tapas Prabhu, who's a sadhu? Can you give me a list of sadhus? Give me some photographs also. I want to pick out a guru. I like this one. One Mataji, I went to give a class in one devotee's house in Malaysia some years ago. And before we started, she was telling me, you know, I like such and such Maharaj, and I want to take initiation from him. I said, oh, that's very nice. He's a very nice sadhu. She said, do you know why I like him? I said, no, I don't know why. She said, because he's very good with children. And she had four children, so she wanted someone like that. You can go to a nursery school, then find a guru there. If that's your criteria, just someone who's good with children. And I don't know if Gorkhishordas Babaji was very good with children. I have some doubts about it. We want Krishna, and it depends on what you want. If we just want someone who's very handsome and plays a nice guitar and sings very good, then we'll get a guru like that. But we may not get Krishna. But Krishna's present everywhere. And sadhus are also present everywhere if we cry for them. And if we want to understand the Bhagavatam, if we want to understand Vedic literature, we have to go through a devotee. Prabhupada says this over and over again. I read a few other statements. It's a letter Prabhupada wrote to one Pujabi Premanand in 1976. Concerning your questions, yes, it will help to read Bhagavad Gita. But you have to hear from the realized person. Without the help of guru, if you read independently, you may be misguided. Our system is to hear from a person. Prabhupada describes this in the purport, in the 36th verse of the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto. Although everyone is free to consult the revealed scriptures in this connection, one still requires the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And that is a direction in this verse. And we could go on for several days. Over the years, we've collected so many different statements from Shastra and from Acharyas making this point over and over again and again. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, a few years after the disappearance of Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he wrote an article which he called Thakur Bhaktivinoda. We printed that twice, once in our magazine about Lord Nityananda, and another time in one of our Bindu magazines. And he describes in there, he says that shortly after the disappearance of Thakur Bhaktivinoda, already a serious misunderstanding has arisen. And some people think that all they have to do is read the teachings of Bhaktivinoda, and they don't have to go to a person. And he says they won't understand. This is a problem, and it's which is inherent in institutions, to be really honest, because we mechanize everything we go on, and people think a personal touch is not required. But the personal touch is absolutely required. It doesn't mean that we give up the institution. It's very good. It's wonderful. ISKCON is helping so many people all over to hear about the holy names, to come to Krishna. We should appreciate that and be supportive of the management. But we need to hear from persons. We need to develop personal relationships. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada, he described a very interesting thing in one lecture in this regard in Vrindavan in 1972. I think this is one of his Nectar Devotion classes. Prabhupada said, this hearing process is very, very important. The people are not interested in hearing. They are simply busy in some other duties. My Guru Maharaj used to call one who is not interested in hearing, he called them Dandavat class. The Dandavat class of men. Means that simply they know how to make Dandavats. That's all. Mm-hmm. He said, Dandavats are nice, but if one is only offering Dandavats and does not develop the intent of hearing Shravanam, then he's not making very much progress. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us this in Ramananda Samvad, in the 8th chapter of Madhya Lila, which is arguably the most important section in Gaudiya literature, because it describes the purpose of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's getting instructions, he's learning from Roy Ramananda, who's Vishakha Sati. He's Krishna, but Krishna knows everything, he's Sarvagya, but there's one thing he doesn't understand, and that's the love of Srimati Radharani. He doesn't know which way to go, because he has his position. He's Prithivishroy, the supreme object of love. But he's defeated by the Prithiashroy, the abode of love, who's Radharani. So he needs help. So that help comes in the form of the Lita and Vishakha, who come as Srup Damodar and Roy Ramananda. And they're on the bank of the Godavari. Roy Ramananda, he gave instructions to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understands everything. But he was speaking through the mouth of Ramananda Roy. And he asked him, what is the best thing? We mentioned this the other, I think yesterday also in class. And Ramananda Roy told him, Vanashrama Charavata Purushena Parapuman, that we should practice Vanashram Dharma. And Nanyat Tattoshakaranam. There's nothing else that can please Lord Vishnu. And Mahaprabhu said, Eho Baya, Agitahar, this is okay. Can you say something more? This is external. And then Ramananda Roy, he said, well, Yat Kuroshi Gadashnoshi, Yat Jahosi Gadashi, we should offer everything to the Lord. Very nice verse. Mahaprabhu said, Eho Baya, this is also external. Agitahar, can you say something more? Then Ramananda Roy said, well, Vanashram Tyag. Giving up your sister, your position in Vanashram. Sarvadharmam Prityaga Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Very important verse. But Mahaprabhu rejected it. Eho Baya, this is external. Agikahar, can you say something more? Ramananda Roy said, well, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati Sama Sarveshi Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. He talked about Gyanamishra Bhakti. Bhakti, which is mixed with some gyan. And there's some conception of the Lord. The previous things were rejected by Mahaprabhu because there was no conception of who we're supposed to surrender to, who we're supposed to please. And this verse, there's something, but it's gyan. It's Brahmabhuta Prasanatma. He's speaking about Brahman. So Mahaprabhu said, Eho Baya. This is also external. Agikahar, can you say something more? And then Ramananda Roy began. And this is the demarcation line in Ramananda Samvad with this verse. Jnane prayasam hudapashya namanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiyavartam stane stitam shutigatam tanuvan manobir ye prayaso ajita jito pasi trais trilokyam. This verse comes from the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, spoken by Lord Brahma. He says that give up gyan. Gyane prayasam means all the previous things you were talking about because they're all theoretical. You're not hearing from a realized person. Therefore, gyane prayasam udapashya namanteva jivanti, our life, the life of our bhakti, jivanti sanmukaritam, is to hear from the satmukh, the lotus mouth of a realized person. Satmukaritam, and what do we hear? Bhavadiyavartam, topics about Krishna. And then what do we do after we hear those things? Stanistita, chill out. You don't have to go running around here and there. This means you've found a guru. You've heard from the right person. So you don't have to make any more changes. You don't have to worry about adding some religious behavior. You don't have to worry about going here or going there. Stani sita, shruti gatam, tanu van manobir. Stay where you're at and worship what you've heard. How? Tanu van manobir, with your body, your mind, and your words. And what will happen if you do that? Ye prayaso ajita jito pasi trais trilokyam. Those persons who do that, they'll defeat Krishna, who's undefeatable. Brahma-bhuta prasanatmana sochatina kamchi. The Brahmavadis, they want to become one with the Lord. The Prabhupada said the bhaktas have a greater aspiration. They want to become greater than the Lord by becoming devotees, by developing bhakti. So we can't understand Srimad Bhagavatam just by reading. What kind of pride is it that we think, I'm going to understand the Lord just by taking a book, just by giving a little money from it, and I'll memorize something, and I'll go to Mayapur, and I'll study Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav, and I'll do that. That's good. We should understand the Bhagavatam, even in a scholastic way, it's good. But don't think that's the purpose of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is a person, and he has to be approached through a person. We can't just jump in. Here I am, let me enter into the Rasa-lila now, let me enter into this place. No, we have to hear from a person. But then, how do we hear? There's different types of hearing. And Jiva Goswami describes this in Bhakti Sandarbha. He says there's Shravana Adhikar. It requires some qualification to hear. We've also experienced this. You go to talk to some people, three different types of discussions are there. Vada, Jalpa, and Vitanda. Vada means a discussion in the mode of goodness. It takes place, Madhvacharya says, between guru and disciple. It's submissive hearing. And in a Vada discussion, you don't mind if you're wrong. You don't mind if you're defeated, because the purpose is, I want to know what is the truth. A Jalpa discussion is in the mode of passion. In a Jalpa discussion, one or both participants just want to be heard. You ever take part in a discussion like that? And you're trying to tell somebody something really important. He's, do you know, does my hair look good today? I just got it done. Really, and I dyed it too, and it's nicely curled. And do you like that? And I just want to talk to you about this and this thing. And yes, yes, that's a Jalpa discussion. And it's not going to make any progress. You're not going to go deep in bhakti in a Jalpa discussion. And a Vitanga discussion is in the mode of ignorance. One or both participants just want to win. They want to have an argument with you. And I'm right and you're wrong. Vidyananda Maharaj once said, there's two persons having an argument. And the one person said, I defeated you. And the other person said, no, you didn't. So then the first person picked up a hammer and hit him on the head. There, I hit you on the head with a hammer. And the other person said, no, you didn't. That's a Vitanda discussion in the mode of ignorance. Don't waste our time with crazy people like that. We shouldn't bother speaking with them. They don't have Shravana Adhikar. the qualification to hear. Suni Lena Sunakana. Narottam says in one song, it goes in one ear and whew, it comes out the other ear. Once there was a king who one day someone brought him a human skull. Maharaj, I found this when I was plowing my field. I found this skull. He gave it to the king. The king called for his ministers. I have a question for you. I want to know this skull, this person, when he was alive, was he a wise man, Vidvan, or was he a murka? Was he a fool? You tell me. And if you can't tell me, I'm going to cut off your head. So all the ministers are in a very... Kings are very dangerous, isn't it? Ministers are in a very difficult situation. And one of the ministers said, I can say, do you have a piece of straw? Yes. And I gave him a piece of straw. He inserted the piece of straw in one ear of the skull and pushed it, and it came out the other ear. Said he was a murka, a fool. So Suni Lena Sunakana, it's not a question of memorization to hear the Bhagavatam. We have to have proper qualification. And Jiva Goswami says three things are required. Pranipatthena, Pariprashnena, Sevaya. Otherwise you don't have Shravana Adhikar, the qualification to hear. You have to surrender to someone. You have to inquire from them submissively, not in a challenging way, but in a humble way. If you have some doubts, you have to be honest about it and place them before the person. If we don't do that, then those doubts are like poison. And you keep them inside of you and they'll eat away your body and you'll die spiritually. We have to reveal our doubts. Pariprashna and Sevaya. Shru Shru Shro Shuddhadanasha Vasudeva Katarichi Shanmahat Sevaya Vipra Punya Tirthana Sevana. If you want to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam itself states you have to render service to the Bhakta Bhagavat. And by rendering service to him, you'll get Kataruchi. You'll get a taste for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. You'll really hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada, in one of his nectar devotion lectures in Vrindavan in 1972, he said that there are many so-called preachers, but they don't have a taste. And he said, and therefore, they're not able to give a taste to others. He said, it's not the fault of the people, it's the fault of the so-called preachers. He said, because they could not create taste. They wanted to take the place of Krishna. What does that mean? It has a very deep purport to it. If we don't have taste, and that taste comes by being a servant, then we're going to want to take Krishna's position. And sometimes we see that in book distributors. So I want to be the best book distributor, and I want to have the biggest score, and I'll distribute so many books, like that. They want to be like Krishna, or they want to have the pleasure of being a sadhu and defeating someone in argument or making them into a devotee. Yes, I made such and such person a devotee. Krishna makes someone. So they couldn't create taste. They didn't have taste themselves. So they wanted to take the place of Krishna. Prabhupada said, imitation of Krishna, imitation of God, that won't do. You have to create taste. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. Muhuraho lashika bhuvi bhavuka. The Srimad Bhagavatam is liquid nectar, which is drunk through the ears. It's rasayana katha. But we have to hear from those persons who are qualified, and we have to render service to those people. Once it's described that the devatas, they heard that Sukadeva Goswami was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. Wow, we want to take part in that. So they came down and they said, we'd like to do a trade. Do you have a problem here? This king has been cursed by that Brahmin Sringi. He's going to die in 1 week. So we'd like to get this Bhagavatamrit, this nectar that you have. And we have something we'd like to offer in exchange. We have some Devamrit, some nectar of the gods. And you give this Devamrit to Maharaj Parikshit, and he'll live a fantastically long span of life for millions of years. He won't have to die. Sukadeva Goswami says, no, go away. You don't understand Srimad Bhagavatam. you're taking it in a very cheap way. It's not a proper exchange, because this Srimad Bhagavatam, Ihamrita Nindani, it makes fun of this Amrit of the demigods, because this gives one eternal nectar. It gives one Krishna's lotus feet. So we have to approach the Srimad Bhagavatam in the right way. In different Puranas, there's different glorifications given of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Matsya Purana glorifies the Bhagavatam, the Garuda Purana, the Padma Purana, the Skanda Purana. In the Padma Purana and the Skanda Purana, there are Bhagavat Mahatmas, or sections glorifying the Bhagavatam. There's a very interesting and instructive story given in the Padma Purana about which will help us to understand something about the science of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It's described there that once on the bank of the Tungabhadra River, there was a Brahmin whose name was Atmadev. And this Atmadev, he was very expert in Veda, Vedanta, and doing different yajnas. He was very brilliant, like the sun. He was a very wealthy person. But even though he was very wealthy, he maintained himself by begging, because he was a very wise person, very realized, very humble person. He had a wife. His wife was a very cruel lady, very gossipy person. Her name was Dunduli. And Atmadev, he was very sad, because although he had so many good qualities, he had so much wealth, he didn't have a son. And he was always wanting a son. He started getting older. He became in his 50s. And he's thinking, what am I going to do? I really want to have a son. So he was doing so many different pujas and chanting mantras and getting yantras and doing things, but no son was coming. One day he went to the forest feeling very sad. And when he was going to the forest, he came across a sannyasi and sadhu. And the sadhu saw that Atmadev looked very depressed. My dear Brahmin, what's wrong? You look very unhappy. And Atmadev told him, putrahinam griham shunyam, that without a child, without a son, the home is a shunya. It's empty. There's nothing. I don't have a child. My life is wasted. And he said, I'm so unfortunate. The devas and the Brahmins, they won't happily accept my offerings of food because I have no child, no son, no daughter. He said, even my cows, they're barren. Even the cows in my home, they don't have any, they don't have any calves. When I plant a tree, no fruits or flowers come from the tree. I'm very cursed. So this sannyasi, he was a Siddha Mahatma. He was a perfected yogi. And from the lines on Atmadev's head, he could understand everything about his life. He told him, give up your attachment. Your fate is very powerful. He said, you won't have a son for your next 7 births. Atmadev, he said, what is that? I don't want to be a sannyasi. I'm a grihastha. The grihastha life is simply empty with no child. So please, Maharaj, you can bless me. Durgata Gatana Vidatra, you can make the impossible possible. Please give me a child, or my life is just useless. That sannyasi told him, Baba, Sadhu Sabadan, be careful. Chitraketu Maharaj, 6th canto of the Bhagavatam, he got a son. It brought him some happiness for a few days. But then some of the co-wives of his wife who had that child, they poisoned that baby. And the end result was that he became very miserable, very unhappy. You won't get happiness from a son. But since you're very obstinate and you're pushing me, then I'll tell you what. Here, take this mango. Give this mango to your wife. And she eats this mango, as has been sanctified by mantra, she'll become pregnant and she'll have a child. And after taking this mango, she should solve some vow. She should take one meal a day, do some things, and she'll have a pious, righteous son. Atmadev was very, very happy. Very good day. Very nice thing. So he took that mango home to his wife. He said, guess what happened? Got this mango, the sadhu, you can get a baby. The wife was looking at it right. She didn't want to have a child. She was thinking, I have a baby, I'm going to get so fat, I may die in childbirth, a very difficult thing. Child may be a rascal, I don't know. So she said, thank you. I'll just take it in the other room, okay? She took the mango in the next room, and she lied to her husband. I ate it, very nice mango, thank you very much, Prabhu. And then she went to visit her sister. Her sister was pregnant, and she said, my dear sister, I have problems. My husband, he brought this mango back, and he wants to have a child, and this mango has some kind of shakti in it. If I eat this, very, very bad. So his sister gave her some advice. She said, look, you will do this. I have a baby coming. I'll say that the baby died. There was some problem. And when the baby's born, I'll secretly give the child to you. You can give some donation to my husband. He won't mind. And then you can raise the child. And if your husband wonders why you don't have any milk, you say, well, what can I do? But my sister, she has some milk. Her baby died. But then I'll nurse the child for you. And you can give the mango, some of you throw that away or something. So that Dunduli, she's not such a bright lady, she gave the mango to a cow. In their ashram. So some months later, Atmadev was very happy because it seemed that he had a child. Dunduli said, oh yes, we have a baby, when her sister gave birth. And they called that child Dundukari. But actually it wasn't Atmadev's child. It was a child of his sister-in-law. And at the same time that that baby was born, there was another baby born from their cow. Well, Atmadev was very amazed. A human child was born from the cow. Very handsome, very effulgent child. One small, slightly strange thing, he had ears like a cow. But other than that, he was very, very effulgent young child. And they named him Gokarna. Because he had ears like a cow. Mataji knows Gokarna is very famous. So these two children, they were very happy. Now, not just one child, we have two children. But these two boys were very different. Gokarna immediately was very humble, very obedient, very gentle, very interested in Shastra, very religious. But Dundukari, from the childhood, was very witted. At the age of 4 or 5 years old, he started picking up little babies and he'd throw them into wells and kill the babies. He was very, very wicked from a very young age. When he came older and he was 15, 16 years old, one day he was stealing some things and his father caught him and chastised him. And then Dundukari started beating his father and beating his mother. And then he took all the pots and pans in the house and sold them. Atmadev became disgusted. What is this? I thought I would have some happiness with the child, but it's just a huge anxiety. The hell with this. He went to speak to his saintly son, Gokarna. And Gokarna told him, Father, why are you so attached? You're getting old now. You're my mother, your wife, she doesn't like to hear the Bhagavatam. She's not a very religious person. What are you doing staying here? Go to the forest. And Atmadev did. He went to the forest and began practicing his bhajan. And he left Gokarna and Dundukari, the wicked son, with Dunduli, the wife. So Gokarna, after his father left, he also left. And he began traveling to different places of pilgrimage during his bhajan. Shortly after that, Dundukari, one day he came home drunk. And his mother began complaining, why are you drinking? You shouldn't. So he started beating his mother. And he beat his mother very badly. And the mother became very depressed. And that night, after her son took rest, she went and she jumped into a well and committed suicide. Killed herself. But Dundukari didn't care. It's easy now. I can take all the possessions in the house. I have my wealth. So he invited some different beautiful ladies to come live with him. He had 5 prostitutes, representing the 5 senses in his body. And those prostitutes, they were always asking him for money and things, and Dundukari was working very hard to get it. He was robbing people. Sometimes he would kill people, steal their money, to give money to these prostitutes. One day the prostitutes told him, it's been 5 days now, you haven't given us any ornaments? In the last 5 days, we want something new. You should go and get some new things for us. In Dundukari, the Bhagavatam says, Yosit, Kritamagai, Shuksha. Such men, they're like dancing dogs in the hands of women. So he went out to try to satisfy the desire of those ladies. And while he was gone, they started having a discussion. You know, this Dundukari is a very wicked person. He's always stealing. Sometimes he kills people. Sooner or later, the king is going to catch up with him. And Dundukari will probably be put to death. And then what will happen to us? We won't get any of his money. It was very bad, so they made a plan. And when Dundukari came home and brought them some, they said, "Oh, Dundukari, we're so happy. We have some nice wine for you and some nice foodstuffs. You take this." They put something in it. And when Dundukari ate that, he immediately fell asleep. And then those ladies, they put a noose, a rope around his neck, and they tried to strangle him. And Dundukari kind of woke up, but they couldn't kill him. So then they took a piece of burning wood, and they stuck it in his mouth. And they began burning him until he died. The Bhagavatam says, Sarat padmoksavam bhaktram vachascha shavanam hitam Tridhayam shuddhadabham shrinam kodeda chastitam. Don't trust unchaste women. Sarat padmoksavam bhaktram, their face is very beautiful, like a blossoming lotus flower in autumn. Vachascha shavanam hitam. Their words are nectar to the ear. But Hridhayam shuddhadabham, their heart is like a razor's blade. So you can't trust them. So Dundukari died a very terrible death. Meanwhile, Gokarna, he was traveling different places. He got some news that his brother had died. So he went to Gaya, and he did some pinda there with the Brahmins so that his brother would be released from any hellish kind of condition. And then in his travels, Gokarna, he came back to the same village where he'd left. He wanted to do his bhajan. He didn't make a big show going to see his friends. He went to the house where his family used to stay. And he was staying in that house, and that night he saw a very terrible creature come. It was a ghost. And he began making so much noise and attacking him. And Gokarna wasn't afraid. Shokamoha Bhayapaha. The first canto of the Bhagavatam says this is a symptom of someone who hears the Bhagavatam. They have no fear, no lamentation, no illusion. He wasn't worried. But he asked that ghost, "Who are you? How did you become a ghost?" And that ghost began crying. He said, "I'm Dundukari. I'm your brother. Please help me. I did so many bad things, and now I've become a ghost." And Gokarna was very bewildered. He said, I did pinda for you. We offered pinda in Gaya. Very powerful thing. And you're still a ghost?" So Gokarna went the next day and he went to speak to different scholars and sadhus. "What's going on? I did pinda for him in Gaya, but still he's become a ghost. What can we do for him?" No one was really sure. And then Narad Muni came to that place and he asked him, he said, "He has to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Nothing else is going to help." So then he told everyone, "So tomorrow we're going to begin some Bhagavat Katha, some Bhagavat Sapta." Many thousands of people came. And for 7 days, Gokarna began speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dundukari, he is a ghost, he took shelter of a piece of bamboo. Mataji knows. And that bamboo had different knots in it. And each day, at the end of the recitation, one of those knots would break, explode. And then on the seventh day, the final knot in that bamboo broke. And suddenly, a Vaikuntha airplane came. And the Vishnu Dutas arrived there. And they took Dundukari, who assumed a very spiritual form, and they took him on that Vaikuntha airplane and took him back to the spiritual world. And then Gokarna's sitting there looking at all the audience, so many people. And he said, "Wait a minute." He asked, "I have a question for you, Vishnu Dutas, if you don't mind, you're taking my brother away. Atraiva bhava shanti, shotaro mama nirmalaha, amitani vimanani natesham yugapat kutaha, Shravanam Samabhagena Sarvesham Ihadrishyate Falabheda Kuto Jata Prabhuvanti Hari Priyaha. He said, there's so many people here listening. Why was it that only Dundukari, who is a ghost, he's the least qualified of all the people. He's a very wicked person. Why did he get liberation and nobody else? I saw that everybody here was hearing. What is the difference? The Vishnadutta said, oh, good question. Shravanasya vibhedena falabhedo samstitaha shravanam tu kritam sarvaya natata mananam kritam. Falabhedas tato jato bhajanat apimanada. The difference is in the quality of hearing. It's true, everyone present listened to the Bhagavatam, but not everyone practiced manana. They didn't consider what you were saying. They didn't think about it. They didn't try to apply it to themselves. So then Gokarna decided, we'll have another recitation. And again he called for everybody. And he told everybody, now you all have to pay very good attention and you should all think about what you're hearing. It's not just for some amusement or just because the temple president says they got to do this thing, so I'm going to go. No. We should think about it. This is practical. This is for me. And so everyone listened with great attention for 7 days. And on the seventh day when he finished the recitation, there was a big Transcendental Vaikuntha Airbus. Which came down, and everyone in the village, it said that even the pigs and the dogs, everyone in the village, they've been listening attentively and applying that thing. They all entered onto that airplane and they all got liberation. So there's different types of listeners to the Bhagavatam. Some people don't want to hear the Bhagavatam at all. Jiva Goswami describes this in his commentary on the Bhagavatam. He says there's some people who, he says, katam chida nadarika manaya jadi karmi vakta shrotava syat tadasa virajid evityaha pashugnadvina. Some people, they're called karmis. And when it comes time to hear some katha about Krishna, they say, well, I don't have time. It's too long. I have to go make some money. I have to go take rest because I have to go to work tomorrow so I can make money. Because for them, money is the honey. Not Bhagavatam. They're not interested in hearing the Bhagavatam. And therefore, the Bhagavatam refers to them as pashugnat, killers of themselves. Jiva Goswami says, because they're committing spiritual suicide by ignoring the message of the Bhagavatam. So we should hear, and we should hear properly. The Skanda Purana also has a section called Bhagavat Mahatmya, and a very interesting discussion is there. This is in the Vaishnava Kanda, chapter 4 of the Skanda Purana, and it describes two basic categories of listeners, Srotarota, Nirupyante Srimad Vishnu Katashreha Pravara Avarashchitti Dvivida Mataha. The two types of persons who are dedicated to hearing Krishna Katha. Superior persons and inferior. Two types of shrotas, two types of listeners, superior and inferior. And he divides these further. The good listeners, the chatak, the swan, the parrot, the fish, and the bee. And the bad listeners are compared to a wolf, to a buvanda bird, a bull, a camel, and a donkey. So the chatak bird listener is someone who's very, very intent, like a chatak bird who only wants to drink water coming from the clouds when it rains. He's a very, very intense personality. So a chatak listener is a superior listener. He ignores everything else. He doesn't see some pretty girl walking by on the street when the katha is going on. He turns his cell phone off before he comes in. He's just very, very intent on hearing Krishna Katha. He's a one-pointed person. Then there's a swan listener, a Hansa Shrota. The Hansa Shrota is a personal listener who can take the essence from various scriptures. Just like a swan can take milk that's mixed with water. He appreciates the essential feature of things. Then there's a Shuka Shrota, a parrot-like listener. And that parrot-like listener, he repeats the essential things, the appropriate things from what he's heard. Like a parrot, sometimes we criticize a parrot listener. But the parrot, what can it say? It'll just say, ok, ok. Or it may say Krishna or something, but it's not saying from the heart. But a parrot listener in this regard is something a little different. It means someone, because a parrot will, you'll say so many things to a parrot. The parrot doesn't repeat everything. It only repeats some things. So a parrot-like listener means someone, he listens to many things, and then he takes the essence. He, something of those things which he can digest, he repeats that. I remember when I joined in Los Angeles, I had one friend, the Brahmachari in San Diego, and he memorized an entire lecture, word for word, of one, that one sannyasi gave. And then later on, when they asked him to give class, he sat down and he repeated word for word what he heard. And everybody said, wow, this is such a nice lecture. So good. But what's the point of it? Nothing is realized. He's just repeating something, repeating everything. Rather, better than that, he should contemplate on certain points of it. Yes, this is relevant for me. I like this thing. Let me repeat this thing. That's a parrot listener. Fourth type of good listener is a Matsyashrota, a fish-like listener. And that person's very, very eager. He's relishing the nectar. He doesn't speak even for a moment, like a fish in the ocean of milk. The fish is just drinking the nectar of that ocean of milk. And it doesn't speak, doesn't say anything. Have you heard a fish speak before? Fish don't say very much. In the restaurant, the fish are there. They don't say very much. So these are the good listeners. And then there's also bad listeners. One is the wolf listener. A wolf listener is someone who makes rude comments, who criticizes the speaker, and he gives trouble to the expert hearers. So many people want to listen, and some other person wants to come and be a swami buster and challenge them. Maharaj, you said this thing, but is it really like that? And I don't believe this thing. You said this thing wrong. He's just like a wolf in the forest. A wolf is there in the forest. A deer is listening. It's a very nice song of a flute, and that wolf comes and attacks the deer. So similarly, a wolf-like listener disturbs all the sincere listeners. And then there's a Barunda Shrota, like a Barunda bird, who stays on the peaks of the Himalayas. He speaks, is a person who speaks something without actually having heard it from a right source. He read it in a book, and he hasn't practiced it. And then he goes and he memorizes a bunch of things. He makes a bunch of notebooks. And he goes to try to impress people. He's trying to collect some money, something. He speaks something which he doesn't practice himself. He's a Barunda Shrota, like a Barunda bird. Then there's the bowl listener, a Sunda Shrota. Sunda means a bowl. He accepts everything he hears. He's blind to what's important and what's not important. Just like a bull doesn't care if you give him some tasty grapes or some dry oil cakes. It's all the same to him. Interesting thing, a few years ago in Bhubaneswar, someone came to me with the Samaj newspaper. It's a local Ariya newspaper. And there was a picture of a bull on the front of the paper. And there was an article which was called Sunda Sunichi Bhagavat. Which is a kind of a Riya saying. It's a sarcastic saying. Sunda Shunichi Bhagavat means a bull hearing the Bhagavat. What's the value of a bull hearing the Bhagavat? You're going to go and sit down in front of a bull and speak Srimad Bhagavatam to him? But the article said now this saying is taken on new meaning. Because at the... the son of Devahuti, Kapiladev. At the Kapileshwar Mahadev temple, one very ancient temple of Lord Shiva, in Bhubaneswar, every year they have a Bhagavat Saptaha. And the article said that 3 years before, on the first day when the Bhagavat Saptaha began, some bull wandered into the temple courtyard where the kutta was going on. So someone came with a stick to drive the bull out. It's not like Stockholm. You don't have bulls coming into the house like that. But we see that sometimes in Vrindavan. You're doing Govardhan Parikrama or something, you'll see the bulls. Sometimes they come and they put their head inside people's doors. They want some. They're there to beg some food or something. The bulls, sometimes they have to chase them away with a stick. But this bull wouldn't leave. He was very bullish, we say in English. And the bull just sat down. No one could make him budge. And so the kata was going on. When the kata finished, the bull got up and left. The next day, when the kata started again, there was the bull again. And again he came in and sat down. And when it finished, again he got up and left for 7 days. Every day he did like that. The next year, everyone had forgotten about it. And, and again they had another Bhagavad kata. On the first day, the same bull came. It was a true story. We printed this in our magazine on the Bhagavatam. I can show you this picture of the bull. It's a famous bull in Bhubaneswar. And again, every day in the beginning of the kata, the bull would come. The bull would sit and listen. And at the end of the kata, the bull would get up and leave for 7 days. That was the second year. So the third year, people kind of caught on. And they were wondering, is he going to show up this time? And sure enough, there he is. Look at this. This is the newspaper article. We translated some and wrote something. So they said this has a new meaning now, Sunda Sunichi Bhagavat. And this happens sometimes in India. There's other places we've seen in Orissa, there was one Bhagavat Katha going on. There was one monkey who was coming every day and hearing. Sometimes some sadhu maybe was in did some sinful thing and they took a lower birth like that. So, but generally we don't want to be like a bull listener. And then there's a camel listener. Camel listener rejects sweet things and likes sour, mundane things. He's not interested in the Bhagavatam. Just like sometimes devotees, they say, you shouldn't read those books. You should only read Prabhupada's books. Don't read that Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, that Lagu Bhagavatam Rita, that's bogus. You should only read Prabhupada's books. And then you go to their house and you see they have a big stack of magazines and newspapers. They're reading the newspaper every day. They're like a camel. They don't have taste for sweet things. Prabhupada says in his books that you should hear, you should read Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You should read the Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami. These are important things. If you want to accept Prabhupada, Prabhupada says this thing. So we shouldn't be like a camel listener. These are different types of listeners. We should render service to the Bhagavatam. And the Skanda Purana also describes different types of service are there. There are four ways to serve the Bhagavatam. Rajasam Satvikam Chapi Tamasam Nirgunam Tata. You can serve in the mode of passion, in the mode of goodness, in the mode of ignorance, and you can render service to the Bhagavatam Nirgunam Seva, with no mundane qualities. And it describes Saptaham Yajnavad Yatu Sashramam Sattvaram Mudha Sevitam Rajasam Tattu Bahu Pujari Shobhanam. It describes how people serve the Bhagavatam in the mode of passion. They make a very big pandal, and it costs so much money, and it's a big passionate endeavor, and it goes for 7 days, and they have so many things that go on. It costs so much money, very big, complicated thing. Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Bahuranga Tyag, we should give up over endeavors. It's detrimental to bhakti. If the guru tells you to do something like that, then you must do that. That's another thing. That's guru seva. That's not an over endeavor. But if guru doesn't tell you to do that thing, and then you try to put on such a big program like that, then your bhajan will go to hell. You won't have time. So many times we see, we travel, we give some classes, we talk with devotees. Many times we go to someone's house and I'll say, Prabhuji, where's your wife? Well, she's in the kitchen. She's cooking. She's making a big feast for everyone. She has no time to come to hear anything. She's just cooking. Because it's very difficult. You want to make some nice lasagna and some pizza and have some ice cream and this thing and that thing for so many people. You do that, but you have no time for bhajan. You have no time for hearing. So the Skanda Purana says that this is hearing the Bhagavatam in the mode of passion. Masena rituna vapi shavanam svara samyutam satvikam yadanaya sam samastananda vardhanam. Someone who hears for a month or a whole season, they have some ruchi, some taste, and they don't endeavor too much. That's hearing in the mode of goodness. And that promotes samastananda vardhanam. It gives ecstasy, hearing the Bhagavatam in that way. Tamasam yat tuvarshena salasam shariyayutam vishmiti smiti samyuktam sevanam tachchasokyadam. Hearing in the mode of ignorance is when it's done maybe in a day, maybe over the year, but it's done in a lazy way. It's done without very much faith. And sometimes a person remembers what was spoken, sometimes they forget it. But he says, even this kind, sevanam tachcha sokyadam, even this kind of hearing gives some happiness because the Bhagavatam is so very, very wonderful. And he describes, varsha masa dinanam tu vimucha niyamagraham sarvada prema bhaktyaiva sevanam nirgunam matam. Someone who hears the Bhagavatam with loving devotion, and they don't fall prey to Niyama Agraha or Niyama Agraha, Rupa Goswami describes in Upadeshamrita. They're not too fanatical. I have to follow all the rules of Vanashram Dharma. Otherwise I'll go to hell. They're not too fanatical about all the rules and regulations, nor are they negligent and lazy about following the rules and regulations. They do it in a proper way. And they follow what's been said. And they're simple. Those persons get the real benefit of hearing the Bhagavatam. So I know it's a little late. Well, I want to conclude with a short story. My grandmas used to tell this story in connection with the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is meant for people who are simple. Because sarvata hi Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is someone who's simple. Simplicity means that we follow what we hear. We don't have to be big, big scholars. Doesn't mean you have to be a Sanskrit scholar. Doesn't mean that you have to memorize lots of verses. That's nice. That's culture. We like to hear from a speaker who could do that. But it's not that only that kind of person can speak the Bhagavatam. We often cite the example of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. I don't think he knew a lot of verses. He couldn't read Sanskrit. But we consider him to be the embodiment of the Bhagavatam, because he was practicing it. So in this regard, there was once one village where there was a young lady living with her husband and her mother-in-law. And one day they heard that there was going to be a recitation of the Bhagavatam for a week. So the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law, they decided they would go. On their way to go to that katha, there was one, tidal inlet. You must have like that here in Sweden, I think, also. Sometimes some river, and when certain times of the day, when the tide is high, then the water of that river is very high. And then when the tide goes down, the water also goes down. So when they came to that river, the tide was low, and they crossed over very easily. They went on the other side, and they heard the Bhagavatam for a week. Very nice katha. And then they finished, and they came back. When they came back, the water was very high. The daughter-in-law, she remembered that the speaker was saying, you should chant Krishna's names. And by chanting Krishna's names, you can easily cross over the ocean of material existence. So that daughter-in-law, she began chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And she crossed over that water very easily. And then the mother-in-law, she started crossing over, and the water was very, very high up to her neck, up to her mouth, and she started drowning. And then she started calling out for her daughter-in-law, help me, help me. And the daughter-in-law, she said, Mother, chant Krishna's name. Didn't you hear the sadhu? He was speaking the Bhagavatam. You should chant Krishna's name. What to speak of this river? You can cross over the ocean of material existence. And that lady became angry. Ha! Who do you think you are? Speaking to me like that? I'm your mother-in-law. You have no right. It's like this in India, isn't it? You can't tell that to me. Who do you think? And she drowned. Because she couldn't hear that thing. So what's the difference between those two ladies? The daughter-in-law was very simple. And she just accepted what she heard. So we should hear the Srimad Bhagavatam in a simple way. It doesn't require that you have to learn Sanskrit, that you have to be a big, big person. But we should act on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Three things are required to have Shravana Adhikar, Pranipatthena, Pariprasthena, Sevaya. We should surrender to a person. We should inquire from them. And we should render service to them. That's the tradition of Bhagavat Katha. Because the Bhagavatam is a person. The Bhagavatam is Krishna. Premamaya Bhagavata Krishna Sri Anga Tahate Kahena Jata Gopya Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Premamaya Bhagavata Krishna Sri Anga. The Srimad Bhagavatam is simply made of Krishna prema. It's part of the body of Sri Krishna. And the only way that we can understand it is by approaching the Bhakta Bhagavat. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhakta Binda ki, Gopremanande, Vanchakalpataruvishcha, Kripasindubhyevacha, Patitanam, Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo. Gauranga. So, thank you very much. Yes. Please, Rosie.
Something the difference between reading and hearing. Now in one time there's another difference. What about hearing where you're not associating with person? You know?
Like a cassette tape? We'll speak something more about this in our next session. There's different types of Shabda Brahman, but they come from a person's heart. You can listen to a tape recorder. You can listen to an MP3 recorder. What are those things? Scientists, they've made these machines. They're very, very clever machines. And through some magnetic tape, they can make a sound. They can imitate a sound. So it sounds just like the original person. So much so that if you play a recording of someone speaking in the next room, you might think that someone is there. But it's not. It's just a machine. There's no person. And they can record, they can make that sound, but there's one thing they can't capture. They can't capture the speaker's heart. Therefore, Thakur Bhaktivinoda in Harinam Chintamani, he describes that there's a kind of bhakti shakti that comes from a speaker. There's a difference between hearing from a cassette and hearing from a person. We can give this example. Sometimes people, they may say, well, I don't accept that. Prabhupada's present in his cassette tape. He's present in some way. But let's just suppose that one day you're upstairs in your flat and you're hearing a tape of Srila Prabhupada. And then your wife comes in and she's crying. She says, oh my God, Prabhu, it's a miracle. I don't know what happened. Srila Prabhupada just came. Like Jesus Christ rose from the dead. I don't know, Prabhupada came back. He's downstairs right now. He's going to give class. And you say, I don't need to go. I've got the tape. I'll hear from the tape. Would you do that? If your Guru Maharaj comes and you're hearing his class and recording, and your wife says, but well, Guru Maharaj is here. No, I'm hearing the tape. It's the same. Is it the same? It's not the same. We want to go and hear from a person. My Guru Maharaj once was challenged in this regard because he spoke a lot about this subject matter, Shabda Brahman. And someone said, hey, but Prabhupada, he gave Gayatri Mantra by cassette tape. My Guru Maharaj made a very interesting reply to that. That question was brought to him twice and he gave two different replies. First time he said that Prabhupada did that. He's a very powerful person. But we can't imitate that. It's a very extraordinary thing. Second time, he cited an article from Bhaktivinoda in Sajjana Toshini, where Bhaktivinoda had said that the symptom of an upasampradaya is that they take an extraordinary act of a great soul and they make it a standard for everyone to follow. We can't do that. Prabhupada's a very extraordinary person and he had an extraordinary mission. He wanted everyone all over the world to hear about Krishna. He wanted to spread the Srimad Bhagavatam and the teachings of Mahaprabhu, the Maha Mantra. But who was there to help him properly? There was no one else who could give initiation properly. So Prabhupada was giving Gayatri Mantra by tape. So this movement would go on. We have to see Phalina Parichate. We have to see the fruit of something, the purpose why he did that. But it doesn't mean that that's the standard thing. We should certainly listen to tapes. We should certainly read Srila Prabhupada's books. We should hear more tapes. It's very good for us to hear tapes. But we shouldn't be silly and think that magnetic tape that we're playing through this machine that's imitating the sound of some person, that it's the same as going and hearing from a person. It's not the same. Just like sometimes people, that they'll go and they'll go to the computer and they'll type in www.darshan.com and I'll have darshan. That's not darshan. Darshan means we come before the Lord and we report to Him. Not that I just type something in the computer. That's nice. It's very wonderful they've done that on those websites and you can see some deities, we get some inspiration from that. But it's not the same as going there and smelling the incense and offering obeisances with our body on the floor and standing before the Lord.
Yeah, isn't it something also with another relationship?
And yes.
You might go to a sacrifice when you actually go somewhere in front of somebody and become it's another rasa.
We've all experienced, if you've experienced privilege, you give nice classes, I'm sure, and we've all experienced, there's maybe somebody sitting and listening, like this, and it's difficult for you to take your attention away from them as a speaker. They're just like sucking you in. There's a reciprocation there. There's a rasa there. This is a personal science, a science of bhakti. We don't, you know, we want to have some rasa. What kind of rasa do you have with a tape player? Okay, very good point. Anything else, is there? I'm afraid to look at the time right now. Okay.
The book was in the bamboo.
Dundukari.
He desired to go back to Godhead and he doesn't want to stay in the field. Uh-huh. And he was serious about that. But the listener of others, they were not serious about that.
Yes.
But they don't have enough desire to go. They want to stay.
Okay. Yes. And they didn't contemplate. They weren't listening properly. It's an important thing. This is a difference between art and craft. And craft is something we do in a mechanical way.
Saddam Khan was also told that if somebody, you don't desire to go back to God, but we have to desire for that.
Yes. So there's an art, the art of listening. Art of listening means that we have to reciprocate with the speaker. We have to strongly desire. Otherwise, what can we hear? Sunilena Sunakana goes in. One ear comes out the other.
What creates faith in Sadhguru?
Hearing. It's this guy, Prabhuji was quoting, Sutikshito Patam. We see a sadhu with our ear. We should hear from a sadhu. Sometimes people say, oh, I don't like this sadhu. He has a black body. Or he has this. He has a scar on his face. Or this or that. But we don't. We have to hear. We can't see a sadhu. And by hearing from them, that will touch our heart. The other day we gave an example of one person who people gave money to him to murder a sadhu. It's a true story. It happened just, gosh, maybe 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. They gave him money to murder a sadhu in Nabadweep. And his gunda took a gun and went to that sadhu's ashram. When he got there, the sadhu was giving some, speaking some katha. So he sat down in the audience and was done, just waiting for the right time. Sadhu was speaking, and the man started listening. And after a little while, I'm like, God, this is amazing. And when the katha finished, he got up and walked up to that sadhu and started crying. He fell at his feet. Please forgive me, they sent me to kill you. But I want to be your disciple now. So we see a sadhu by hearing from them. Not just, wow, this person looks really handsome, or this person's in this institution, this person lives at Radhakund. This person looks like a Babaji, look, has dreadlocks, he looks really far out, this or that. It's not just by some appearance. During the Vietnam War, the FBI was getting a little worried about the Hare Krishna movement, because so many young people, they were joining ISKCON in those days, and they were avoiding the draft. So the FBI thought, what is this, man? Is this some trick or something? So they sent a spy to the temple in Honolulu. And the spy went to the Sunday feast program and acted like he was really into it, danced and cured on something, you know. And he took prasadam with him and sat next to the devotees and said, yeah, this is really cool. I really like this, you know. And how do you join you guys anyway? The devotee said, yeah, you just come and move in the ashram. And yeah, I want to do that. He shaved his head. he stayed, I don't know, for 3 or 4 days or something. And then he left in the middle of the night and went back and made a report to his superiors in the FBI. And he said in his report, these guys are nuts. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. This is worse than the army. In the army, you got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. These guys, they get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Huh? In the army, you can take a hot shower. And these guys, they take a cold shower. Huh? And in the army, you can have a girlfriend. You can write, they don't let you have girlfriends. You can't watch TV. You can't eat a steak. You can't drink beer. These guys are completely nuts. Hmm? I said like that. But that person looked like a devotee. Hmm? He looked like a devotee. So it's not an external thing. We can't understand with our eyes. We'll understand by our ears, by hearing. Okay? Fuji has heard?
Yeah. Well, I have a question about... Okay, it's a bit complex. But my question is actually, can I hear Srimad Bhagavatam even if I have very little knowledge? For example, I feel like a beginner in this sense. I haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, and I don't know the Bhagavad Gita from to back. So my feeling is that Srimad Bhagavatam is so much more advanced. But still, Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental, so technically, if I hear the Srimad Bhagavatam correctly, I should get something at least. I know that I have so many anarthas in the way, but still. But my question is that you said that to really understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, you have to apply them, or you have to apply what you hear and try to apply it to your life.
Yes.
So, but then you have to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam to be able to apply something or reflect.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for me, often when I read a Bhagavatam, I can't understand much. So, can I understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, or do I have to begin with understanding something else before?
Maharaj Pariksit, what was his qualification? He hadn't read Bhagavatam before he did. He wasn't a big scholar, he was a king, he didn't have time for studying all these things. But he simply heard Srimad Bhagavatam properly. So, and it's described in the Padma Purana that when Gokarna spoke the Bhagavatam the second time, even cats and dogs and pigs, they got liberation by hearing the Bhagavatam. It must have been something special, cats, dogs, and pigs. I think they must have at least understood some English or something, I suppose. It doesn't say. But even animals can get some liberation. We give this example of the bull who was hearing the Bhagavatam. I don't think he was a Sanskrit scholar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, at least we should understand something of the language. But the most important thing is we should act on something that we've heard from the speaker. We should try to please that person and try to do what they say. And then we'll be able to understand the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, it'll be very mysterious to us. It's not that you have to understand. You know, some people, they say that you shouldn't read the Bhagavad Gita until you've read Easy Journey to Other Planets, and before that you should read On the Way to Krishna, and you read this book first, and this book, and this book, and they have this thing. That's okay. You know, for me, I had Bhagavad Gita, I had Science of Self-Realization, I had so many books before I joined, and none of them made any sense to me, and I couldn't read any of them. And then someone gave me a copy of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is a very, I'm convinced, the most philosophical book Prabhupada wrote. Very high book, very difficult. And that book, I couldn't understand that either, but I opened it up and started reading it. Wow, this is far out. And somehow it really clicked with me. And then I moved into the ashram, and after a few days, someone asked me to help them clean some storage room. And I was cleaning, and I found a Adi Leela Canto 1 of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I asked the devotee if I could keep it. Yeah, yeah. So I started reading Adi Leela Chapter 4. Wow, this is far out. I couldn't understand anything, but it really attracted me somehow. So by hook or by crook, Prabhupada used to say, whatever it takes, if someone is attracted to something, what's the harm with reading it? If you want to study something, it's good to have a systematic procedure. And in Bhakti Shastri and other systems we have in ISKCON, there's some systematic way to study things. That's okay. But if your house is on fire, you know, I don't have time to sit and systematically study everything. Then I just got to get to the point right now. We should go to whatever we're most attracted by. And then if you want to make a systematic study, make a systematic study. But I don't see any harm in jumping into Prabhupada's books anywhere. And if we say there is a harm, then we shouldn't do book distribution. We shouldn't distribute Chaitanya Charitamrita. We shouldn't distribute Srimad Bhagavatam. We shouldn't distribute Krishna book, for sure. We shouldn't distribute Nectar of Instruction, or Nectar of Devotion. We should only distribute On the Way to Krishna, The Path to Perfection, the very simple books. And tell them, let me know when you finish reading this, I'll come back to you with the next one. The Prabhupada wanted everyone to get Krishna book. Devotees were going for years to rock and roll concerts, you know, hey, look at this, George Harrison signed this, man. Take this book, and people were getting this Krishna book. That was the first book that I saw. We were saying the other night, we used to, when I was a young boy, a few blocks away from our house, there was some abandoned house, and some of the kids, we used to go and play in that house, and some hippies had been living there, and they'd taken pages out of the Krishna book and pasted them on the wall, and we were looking at it, what is this? We couldn't figure it out. But that was the first contact I had with Krishna consciousness, was seeing Krishna book. So that's there for everybody. So whatever, adoa, antecha, madhyecha, hari sarvatra gyate, in the beginning and the middle and the end, it's all nectar.
But how do I apply things that I don't really understand in my life?
And you have to question. Therefore three things are required. Pariprasana is one of them. If we don't question, if something doesn't make sense to us. Krishna Kroon this morning, she had a question. She didn't want to say it. She thought, oh, maybe it'll sound too challenging or something. And then afterwards, she raised the question. And somehow some answer came. But we have to do that. But if we don't question something, it means we're not really sincere. It means we're holding something back. We have some doubt or something, and I don't want to share that thing because I want to keep my doubt. I like my doubt. It's comfortable. If I expose my doubt, then he may smash me. He may tell me I'm a nonsense or a rascal, I don't want to show that thing. So we're duplicitous with the sadhu, and we don't get the proper result. Okay, you had another question, Andy?
Yes, I was wondering if I know,
we did like that a few years ago, right? You're only supposed to say the Panchatattva mantra three times, I think, in a kirtan, that's it, and you're supposed to dance like this, you know, the Swami step, exactly like this. That's okay. But not everybody's going to like that. Some people, they want to spin around or jump up and down or whatever, and I don't see such a harm in that.
Because I know some sadhus are reacting on that, and this is like a very cultural thing.
Well, it depends on our mood. Sometimes devotees, when they have these rules for kirtan, we should understand the purpose of them. This is the idea behind the principle of niyama agraha and niyama agraha. Rupa Goswami speaks about in Upadeshamrita. There's some rules and regulations, and some people just follow them in a mechanical way because that's the rule, and that becomes an obstacle in their bhakti. Other people, they don't follow the rules. Who cares about the rules? I'm on Ragmarg. I'm a very advanced devotee. I don't have to follow all that. And they also don't progress properly. So we should understand the rules. We should be saragrahi and see the essence of them. For example, in some places that they won't allow more than one pair of kartals or mridanga in the Mangalarti. And we have to do like this, and that's the rule. But there's a reason for that. Because Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, when the devotees were having Mangalarti, they were having a big smasher, basher, wampers and everything, Mangalarti. And Prabhupada came down and he stopped and he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "It's 4:30 in the morning. Radha and Krishna are just waking up in the Kunj. And you're taking wampers and smashing and jumbo. What is this? It's not Mangalarti." Sometimes some Vaishnavas, just by the way, in this regard, they may criticize our line. Every Vaishnav, they have their bhajan pranali, their system of bhajan they do, and that's very close to their heart. And whatever their guru gave them, that's very important. It's natural. But different people have different types of bhajan pranali. And in ISKCON, sometimes people say, "Oh, ISKCON, you people, what are you doing chanting samsara prayers in the morning to guru? We should be thinking about Radha and Krishna and the Kunj. We should be thinking about Mahaprabhu." But we say, "No, this is what Prabhupada gave us. I like these prayers, personally." We should have a proper meditation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami have described that Mangalarti is when Radha and Krishna are waking up in the Kunj. And the gopis are going and they're doing artik. And what's going on at the same time? The manjaris, they're watching through the holes in the cones to see what's going on. And we're singing these prayers to our spiritual master because we're worshipping not Radha and Krishna, the gopis, we're worshipping those manjaris. I'm worshipping my Gurudev. I don't have access to that cones. So I'm going to worship my Gurudev. And I'm going to offer these prayers. Nikunja yuno rakti keli siddhaya yali bir yutira pekshani. And I'm thinking of my guru at that time. Because my guru is right there watching what's going on in that kunj. We can have that kind of meditation. But in any case, we should think about things and the purpose behind them. Prabhupada liked that. Like to have a quiet, gentle Mangalarti. Because we're waking up Radha and Krishna in the morning. So we should think about things behind it. Have a question?
Yeah, I have a question about this endeavor. You mentioned that sometimes the endeavor and the passion and that I'm not sure if they're connected, but yeah, that this kind of pandal making without that being instruction of guru could be, yeah, it's not the proper way to do it. So I think that we have this what is the difference?
This is a sensitive subject when I say this thing. And we're a lot of passionate people. We're Westerners and we don't know a lot about bhajan, and we're in lower modes sometimes, just to be very honest, speaking about myself. And we have so many projects. We have the Food for Life project, and we have the preaching project, and then this project, and that project. We have so many projects. But how many people have the Nam project? We're not interested in that thing. And it's okay, because we have some passion. Prabhupada, I think, saw that. So you do. You make big things. You're Americans. He would say sometimes, "You Americans, you do big things." So sometimes ISKCON was like the American movement, and they're doing all these big crazy things because they're engaging these passionate people. And that's okay, because bhakti is such a powerful thing that even if they're doing it in a mechanical way, in a passionate way, still there's some benefit. But we should know the difference between bhakti in the mode of goodness, and bhakti, and transcendental bhakti, nirguna bhakti, and rajasic bhakti, and tamasic bhakti. We should know there's some difference between these things. Prabhupada speaks about these things in the Bhagavatam also. It's important for us to understand it. We can't understand it because we're so passionate, and all we can see is the projects, and we want to do this thing and that thing, and we have no time for chanting. That's for neophytes. That's for beginners. So we don't do that thing. And okay, we're doing, and it's good, and people come, but we also see that the people who come, if you're having a real passionate program like that, and I've seen devotees sometimes who wouldn't chant any rounds for days, sometimes a week or 2 weeks, because they're putting on a big Ratha Yatra festival and doing some things, and they're cooking the feast for 20,000 people and do this and this. And that's wonderful. They're so dedicated. And that's the kind of bhakti. And those people get so much benefit. But I also see it, that kind of atmosphere is a passionate atmosphere. When you're doing it, you're making that pando program, you're cooking that prasadam, you weren't cooking it with the holy name. You're cooking it with some passion. You're building that pandal. We make something with bricks. The bricks that we're making that pandal are the bricks of the holy name, or the bricks of our passion. You know, we're just thinking about, yeah, I'm going to have 20,000 people come, and we're going to distribute 5,000 plates of prasadam, and we're going to collect $50,000, and we're going to... Everything becomes a list of numbers and a passion. And it's okay, and it affects people somewhat. And they get the prasadam, but I've seen if they sit down, Prabhupada sat down in Tompkins Square Park, there was no pandal, there was no big prasadam distribution, just a pair of kartals. Mm-hmm. And he sat down and he cried for Krishna. And he did his kirtan. People were, wow, this is really powerful. And it changed their life. So Prabhupada's vision of ISKCON to me was a very beautiful thing, that he wanted something for everyone. For people, we should also have something for devotees who are rustic, who are deeper, who want something more. And we should also have something for people who are passionate and who are very new and want to do some big thing. Yeah, very good. Go do some big thing, some big project. But do something. Help for Krishna. It's good for us. Is that okay? What is an unchaste woman? What is an unchaste woman? What is an unchaste man? I mean, someone who is not faithful to their partner. In Vedic culture, there's different definitions we can give of that in terms of vanashram and things. But I don't like to emphasize all these vanashram things. We need something practical. And bhakti is a much, much more powerful thing. It doesn't wait for vanashram. We can't follow vanashram. If we try to, Prabhupada said that, if you try to follow Manasanghita, then what will you do? According to the Manasanghita, we're all yavanas and malechas. There's nothing, there's no prescription for us in Manasanghita. But there's a prescription for us in Srimad Bhagavatam. That anyone who chants the holy names, what is that verse? It's understood that they've already performed all they've taken bath in all the sacred rivers and studied all the Vedas, and everything has already been done. So I would suggest that really a chaste person is someone who's chaste of the instructions of their guru, and they're chaste especially with their bhajan, and they have faith in their guru. And I'm going to stay with my guru. And maybe he's not a big flashy person, but this is my guru. This is a person who helped me. This is the bhajan pranali I've been given. I'm going to stick with this. And I don't care if someone comes and tells me, you're a nigger Vaishnava, your guru is second class. Then okay, I'll make a t-shirt. I'm a nigger Vaishnava. But I'm a follower of my guru. And I'm not going to give him up. I'm not going to... That's chastity. And of course, a chaste lady in a relationship, in a Vaishnava relationship, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that Vaishnava marriage is not the same as Vanashram marriage. Because they're Vaishnavas. He says in a Vaishnava marriage, it's not that the wife is a servant of the husband, or the husband is a servant of the wife, which is what usually happens in the West, right? But they serve each other for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. If someone's a Vaishnava, how can I accept her as my servant? She's a Vaishnavi. She's a devotee. My God, I should serve her. And they serve each other. And it's a very happy relationship. The relationship is based on bhakti then. And that chastity and that kind of relationship means chaste to the principles of bhakti. This is the kind of chastity that we're interested in. And chaste to my partner because we want to help each other in bhakti, and so we don't run away with another person. And if you really want to get into it, then we shouldn't think about another person in a lusty way. We shouldn't do this or that. But we should have the purpose in mind, the goal, not just do things in a mechanical way or out of fear of going to hell or getting some sin or something, or some vanashram. We want to do things for bhakti. That's why it's an ashram. An ashram means a place where we take shelter, ashraya. We practice our bhajan. And so we have a partner in our ashram. And we have a brahmachari friend, and we're friends with him. The purpose of our ashram is to make spiritual advancement, to do bhajan. The purpose of grihastha ashram is to do bhajan with a partner. And we should be chaste to each other in that way. Is that okay? I have a thing. I don't like this stuff when people start pushing this thing about chaste ladies according to Mahabharata and Manasamhita. And this. That's okay. I like that. I like that culture. Mataji knows that culture. That's a beautiful culture. That's the best culture in the world. But we're never going to be able to imitate that. Not in our lifetimes. I don't think so. Not in Stockholm. And it's not fair. And it's not real. And what do we care? Someone may be a lesbian, they may be a homosexual. Fine. Be whatever. Stani sutta, shuti gatam tanavam. Stay where you're at. We don't care. But practice bhakti. Because bhakti is what's powerful.
I'm not sure if I understood them, that I'm asking about the purpose of Srila Prabhupada's verses and Srila Prabhupada's book. I understand the need of spiritual master, having a spiritual master, having a Vaishnava, explaining further and like that. But when we were going up the book distribution, that everything is in Srila Prabhupada's books, and these books can make devotees.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I understood the...
Everything is in Prabhupada's books. In Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada says you can't understand by reading a book. You have to go to a person. That's what Prabhupada says in his books. We should read the books. If we don't have association, we can associate through the books. They're there. All sadhus, all acharyas say like that. We can associate with Narad Muni, Jiva Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami by reading their ideas, by contemplating their feelings, their moods. We can associate with them. But we have to have a personal relationship, ultimately. If we're serious about bhakti, if someone's casual, then they can have a casual kind of relationship. Krishna's there for everyone. We can associate with Krishna and Shantaras, also in a kind of impersonal way like that. But that's not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. He rejected Shantaras. Yes?
The question is more pertaining to, though we have been given essence of Vedas and, you know, making it condensed form into Bhagavatam and Gita in that way, even when I try to go through so-called condensed form, it is so wide. And to be very honest, I have not completed even once, you know, Bhagavad Gita going from end to end and getting that understanding, the big picture, okay, what it is. I've not been able to do that. I try reading it, it goes up to a certain point, then it stops. Then what to talk of Bhagavatam, which is, you know, Bhagavad Gita, 10 times the size of that, and then after that there is something, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, my concern is that I have a very pathetic memory, and on top of it, I can't understand it.
Manda sumanda matayo.
To be very honest, when you say that, you know, you should read Bhagavatam, yes, I will read it. I'll take the word seriously, I'll start reading it.
Good.
But the problem is, by the time I come to the fourth verse, the first verse is wiped out of my memory. Even if I say that, okay, let me take this one verse, try to put it in practice, then maybe there is...
So Skanda Purana says that service of the Bhagavatam in the mode of ignorance. If we forget what we've read and things. But still, even though it's in the mode of ignorance, there's still some ananda, there's still some happiness there in it. We have to start somewhere. One problem I see sometimes in our preaching movement is that we wear our bhajan on our sleeve. We show it to everyone. And all the sadhus, they say, don't do that. Gopaya guru matmanaha, gopaya nijamalakam, hide your bhajan, hide your guru. Hide your relationship with him. But we want to advertise our bhakti and what we're doing there with everyone. But rather, we should have some private time. This is for me. Let me read. Let me chant. And let me also go and speak to people. And let me do that as a service. And let me read the Bhagavatam as a service. And we should be who we are. Sometimes when we get so caught up in making a show, we try to act like something we're not. And we may become embarrassed to say what you're saying. A lot of people, probably a lot of us, have that problem. But a lot of us are too shy to say it. Because then people won't respect us. And we'll look foolish. We look like we're not really so deep. But this is good. This is how we should begin. Gauranga karuna koro dina hina jane mosamo patita prabhu nahi tribhuvane. Nautam Das Thakur, he sings it. My dear Lord, I am the most fallen person in all the three worlds. Amita adhama tumi adhama tarana ubaye sambandhe patita bhavana. I'm fallen. But you're the deliverer of the fallen. And that's our relationship. So when we find like that, we can't even read, we fall asleep, we can't remember what was two or three verses ago, that's okay. Be yourself. And cry. Krishna, I'm so bad, I'm so dull, I can't even remember what I read. Please help me. And Krishna will give us intelligence. And maybe he'll give you some technique. You should write down something, or you find some interesting thing and write it and go talk to someone about it. Or try to practice what you're reading. And something will come. But we should serve the Bhagavatam with devotion and read it every day. Whether we can understand it or not, whether we can remember it or not, it's okay. Mahaprabhu, he's Patit Pavan, the savior of the fallen. But he's not Kapatya Pavan, the savior of the crooked. And those of us, he's not the savior of those persons who want to have a costume show and try to pretend that there's something they're not. He doesn't. But those persons who are really, really fallen, really, really low, like Jagai and Mudai, as bad as you can get, he delivers them. If they're just honest, I'm Jagai, I'm Mudai. Okay? We made a magazine about this. That's our latest magazine about Patit Pavan. Krishna Kun has some copies. Somebody wants. Okay? So I should make some announcement too. I remember the magazine. We have a free email magazine. It comes every codicil, every issue. We try to have some new translations and new research things in it. Nice songs, different things from Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas. And it's a free thing. You can sign up with Krishna Kun if you want. It comes every Ekadasi in PDF format called Krishna Katamrita Binda. That's different from his printed magazine.
I
Well, it's not just by faith. Faith in what? Some people had faith in Adolf Hitler. You know, we should have faith in Krishna. We should have Shastriya Shraddha. We should have Paramarthika Shraddha, not Lokik Shraddha. Everybody says, well, this person's a guru. He's a sadhu because he's a zonal acharya. That's Lokik Shraddha, common faith. But we want Paramarthika Shraddha. So that kind of faith is the kind of faith by which we can surrender. Krishna says it, sarva dharma pratyagya, you give up everything, and aham tam sarva papebhyo. That kind of faith will, when you surrender, all the pop will go away. But if we don't have that depth of faith, we just have some show, yeah, everybody else is doing it, so I'll do it too, and I'll jump up and down real big in the kirtan and say, you know, Shivagurudeva ki, like this, and t-shirts and buttons and whatever like that. That's not, you know, just making a show is not the same thing. Okay? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in the last chapter, the 10th canto, he says, Madhuyena Samapayat. We should include something with sweetness. Want to do a little bhajan? Oh, it's too- too late.
Sleeping.
Oh, we'll be okay. We should stop then. Thank you. We don't want to. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Shiva Prabhupada ki. Sarvita Bhakta Vinda ki. Ko Premanandi. Samavita Bhakta Vinda ki. Ancha Kapa Dari Vishcha. Kripa Sindhu Deva Cha. Pritanam Pavani Vaishnava. It's 11:30. If anybody had any of these song books, please return them. Thank you. Thank you.